session number 26743, Reel 2.
SQMS Koroya, Reel 2. I was asking you, what had actually happened to your family?
The 19th of March, 1941, they had been out. And because there was too many of them for the house shelter, they went into a municipal shelter. And there was a large death toll. And they were all killed except one sister of 19. Who escaped.
So you're in Third Corps, and were you working a regular routine day? Was there
Yes. Supplying stores, going out. There was the workman side, military, who were taking stores out all over Northern Ireland.
Mm-hmm. So you'd moved from Shropshire
to Northern Ireland, and of course they did the same thing when they were in Shropshire. Mm-hmm. We were responsible, so I hear, from the Mersey all round the Welsh coast to the Bristol Channel.
How many of you were there in the Ordnance element at Corps headquarters at that time? Do you have an idea of the numbers involved?
I would think about 20, 25. They are under two headings, DDoS, Deputy Assistant Director of Ordnance Services, and DDoS. And DDoS was a Colonel Smith, Deputy Director of Ordnance Services for the Corps.
Did you see a lot of him?
He was a charming man. He was 41, and he died in... He left us. And we heard that he died in the Western Desert. It was he, and I've got his letter somewhere, who wrote to me and said he was sorry to hear of my loss. He was granting me a month's compassionate leave, but if circumstances were such, I needed more to bring him. But he knew I wouldn't go over the top. Yeah, very nice man, gentleman.
And did you take your month and go back to London?
Yes, went back to London, buried my family, and then looked after my sister. And then I went back.
And what sort of stores were you dealing with in Whitchurch and in Lurgan? Was it
Everything, you know.
And were you doing essentially the same kind of work, processing?
Yeah, process all the time, you know, processing. You're right, you're kind of in part writing letters. I remember a stinker when we were in Payforce. A tank division was told to move, and they said, well, two of the tanks can't move. And DDoS, Major Ingman, who was a drummer in one of the top bands, a Jew, a nice fellow, he wrote them a stinger of a letter and said, what were you doing in the months you were standing still? You could have got the stores that, or got the part that was needed from us and got the thing going.
How did you actually move from Whitchurch to Lurgan? How was that done?
Well, in the leaves that came up every 3 months, the leaves were good. The main route was Stranraer to Larne. So the train I got was either 10 past or 10 to 6 up through Carlisle, Stranraer, then across to Larne and then down. On one occasion, we went somewhere from just north of Liverpool to Belfast, but mainly on. I was there 18 months. I probably had about four leaves, and it was Larne to Stranraer.
But when the Corps itself moved, when the Corps headquarters moved, how did that happen?
They did the same.
Yeah.
That was...
Were you with the Corps headquarters when they moved?
Yes, yes.
How long did it take to get yourselves all packed up and ready to move all your stores and yourselves across?
That would be a difficult question. I wouldn't have thought too long. Mm. A few days.
Mm. What was life like at Lurgan?
We were in a castle-type place called Brownlow House. It wasn't a house, it was a castle. It was massive, you know. And in the main, Corps was there. All aspects of Corps. I mean, my best friend, who came from Harrogate, he was in AQ, or A, some, they were dealing with, I used to go and collect him at night to go out, and it was really top official stuff I was looking at.
Yeah.
People they mistrusted. Oh. They were going to kind of, you know.
Were these contractors, suppliers, who were mistrusted, or were they...
No. These were people with IRA.
Oh, political.
Political, yeah.
I was going to ask you if there was any sort of political atmosphere that you could...
No. I've said in there that the RIA wasn't very active because there were just so many troops there. Mm-hmm. And it was wartime. There would have been no kind of... they would have been dealt with pretty... Over and over again in Part 1 orders, it was... When you go to Belfast, which was only 18 miles away, you did not go into the Falls Road area. Mm. You didn't need telling that. You were just asking not to come out again.
How did you get on with the local people in Northern Ireland generally?
Oh, God. I'd write a book on that. Another woman called Mrs. Brown came up to me when I was in a Presbyterian canteen. And she said, you look down. I said, I'm a bit sad. And she was one of the leading families in the town. Husband Cecil was either a major in the police, honorary major, and home guard. And he was a director of the linen factory, owned the local laundry. Mm. They had a wonderful house called the Limes. Mm. And virtually, I could sleep there. Mm. They had two daughters, you know. And, just to show how it was, it was always Mrs. Brown. I mean, I was treated like a son. Mm. And I wanted a mother, and I kind of fitted in. And on the last day, before we were leaving, we're coming back down Lock Road, and... She said to me, in the highest possible terminology, she said, Charles, I love you, I shall miss you. Mm. And I said, Mrs. Brown, not Barbara, I knew her name was Barbara, I never recalled. I said, Mrs. Brown, you've been a mother to me. I said, I shall always love you. Mm. Kissed her and the daughters. It was all above board. They were absolutely one. In the end, I was taking about six other members down there. You know, they fed us. And they were absolutely wonderful.
Did you keep in touch afterwards?
Yes, I've got somewhere upstairs when Lillian was married. I'm sorry, and then I went down into Kent where they had... They had taken over the a mission, and Lillian was there. The elder daughter, Heather, had married a Presbyterian minister. Mm. I don't know why I didn't follow that up. But do I speak to them now? No, it's a sad. The mother died shortly afterwards. Mm. You know. Died before the war was out.
What was the Corps actually doing in Northern Ireland? What was the
I don't know that they were doing anything, you know. I mean, the story was that in Whitchurch we were responsible for the defence of England from Mersey to the Bristol Channel. Mm. But I've said there was no RIA trouble in Northern Ireland because there were so many troops there. Mm. There was the BTNI, British Troops Northern Ireland. There was Northern Ireland District. You couldn't miss those because, you know, NID in French means nest, doesn't it?
It does.
So their corps sign was a nest. Mm. Our corps sign, when I've got all the movements of three corps before I joined it. They'd been to France, last in, first out. They reorganised themselves at Overton on Dee, then moved down to Whitchurch. And they asked the Corps Commander General, Sir Ronald Adam, you must have a corps sign. We'll give you a week. You can have it now, said Colonel Adam. A fig leaf. So for the whole of the war, I wore on either side the fig leaf. And you must close your ears, you know, because they said, what is that? That's a fig leaf. What's it for? To cover the balls up, you know, when... yes, that was it. And that is, that plant outside is a fig tree.
So you're still covering the...
You see, no. It should go out, but yes. We were just there. We were there nearly 18 months, it seemed, but I don't know. We did exercise after exercise after exercise. Dungannon seemed to be in everything, and I've written there that all I seemed to be doing, I knew Ireland back to front. The only place I didn't go, Northern Ireland, was Londonderry. But I'd been everywhere else, what doing? Running and playing football for the Corps.
When there were exercises, did you go into the field or were...
Oh yes, into the field, yes, right. Moving about. Mm. Yeah.
So when you went into the field with the Corps,
yes,
ordnance element, how would you move and how would you be set up once you'd got
the ground? In the trucks of Corps HQ, which were in the hands of the Royal Army Service Corps.
Okay. So you go out in a truck, and when you got into the field, how would the ordnance element of the headquarters be laid out?
Well, you'd go through the process of issuing stores, equipment, ammunition, you know.
Were you in any particular branch? Were you you were in motor stores at Chilwell, weren't you? That was
yes,
what you were doing
yes.
there.
No, just generally in Corps HQ. In ordnance in Corps HQ.
So how would you actually store and secure ammunition when it went into the field on an exercise? What arrangements did you make for that?
That was in the hands of, what did they call them? They were brave men. I think we lost two of them. One was the captain. They were people who went and inspected, captured, you know, and was blown up with it, you know.
The ammunition technical officers.
Yes, there was a name for it. It escaped me. One was a Sergeant Rowe from Manchester. Mm. One was a Captain Gledhill. His father was a parson. He came from Norfolk. But mainly, you know, it was... I'm not very clear, you know, but we dashed about in these exercises.
When you did go out, did you leave the stores in the backs of the vehicles or did you unload them and make dumps with them?
Make dumps of them, yeah.
So you've got dumps of presumably fuel, POL, petrol, oil, lubricant.
Yes.
Ammunition.
Ammunition, yeah.
Food.
Yeah, food.
And spares.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you have any idea what form the exercises were taking and what sort of manoeuvres they were practising?
No, I can only suppose the general ones, you know, that if you were attacked or if the RIA, what you would do, you know, in various... But it seemed to me a holding place, you know, kind of twiddling your thumbs until something came up, until you were sent somewhere else. Mm. There's so many troops there.
When you moved from Ireland, that was, I think, in June 1942, and you went off to Berkshire, to Cheshire, to the Delamere Forest.
Yes, that was just a camp holding. I mean, the point is, we've got... a long interpretation of it is we've got troops leaving Liverpool all the time. Where are we going to keep them?
So you're just in transit.
Delamere Forest. As we moved out, somebody else, might have been the RAF, would have moved in to this tented accommodation in Delamere Forest.
So you're in a tented camp in Delamere Forest, and your next thing was going on the...
Obosso.
The Obosso. Now, what sort of ship was the Obosso?
It was a peninsula, a P&O boat, so I understand.
What sort of conditions were there on the Obosso? What were you living in?
Well, there was a long table with about 12 each side. Over them you slung your hammock, and that's where you slept. There was almost daily fire stations. You know, the alarm went off and you had a special place to go to, and the register was taken. Brown Smith, yes. Yeah. And a couple of funerals at sea where people had died.
What had happened to them, do you know?
They died naturally, you know.
And did you know where you were going when you got on the Obosso?
Not really, no. It was fairly obvious, you know, from the sun that you were travelling westwards.
Yeah.
And somebody at some stage said, we're not far from America. That was kind to dodge the U-boats. I mean, 56 ships is a formidable sight, all as big as the Obosso, all carrying many ships. And I've said that there was always a major battleship, Nelson, the Malaya, the Rodney, I remember. That one, only one, but as we say, the Malaya went, the Rodney came back. And always a couple of destroyers dashing in and out of this weaving sort. It never went straight, it went that way, you know. And then we went to Freetown. I don't know how many ships.
When you were moving, how was the convoy laid out?
All spread, as far as the eye could see.
So as far as you could see, there were ships around you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But do you remember on that first leg, when you were going across the Atlantic and coming back, were there any alarms for submarines or enemy aircraft?
When we went, it was pretty obvious. We went the Obosso. I can't say how many other ships went there. We went into Freetown. What we went into Freetown for, I've no idea. We were in the water. We weren't berthed up against the side of a quay. And, of course, the Germans must have known that whatever convoy went that way, they called in at Freetown. And when we came out of Freetown, there were some depth charges dropped by these destroyers, but there was no loss of a ship, and we went on to Cape Town.
So the Germans didn't, as far as you know, they didn't make any attempt to attack.
Well, they
the
might have done, otherwise. What were the destroyers doing, dropping depth charges?
I suppose they might have been precautionary, or they might have had a contact.
Yeah, might have had a contact. They might have just been going through the motions. Yeah.
So you went into Freetown, but you didn't go ashore. No.
Yeah.
On you went. So was there any sort of alarm or attack threatened in the second?
The sea was calm throughout.
You said you did drills every day, fire drills. How did you occupy your time?
Otherwise,
you weren't doing drills.
Well, I had a week down below because I had a dirty rifle, and I must say, you're so far down, you've got where one side of the ship meets the other side. And I thought, well, if this is torpedoed, hard luck. No. I'm not going to get out. But no, we were left to our own devices. There was a lot of letter writing. There was lots of... I remember taking place in a boxing match. There were quizzes, that kind of thing. No, there was no real hard and fast work to do.
Was there any physical training on the troop ship?
We might have had PT, yes, and we had PT. and they're deck quoits, you know, but not yeah. many can play that when you've got 2,000 on board. Mm. Oh, and services, you know, they...
Divine service.
Yeah, divine service, you know. Mm.
You were saying earlier on you were a pacifist. What was your religious background then? Were you...
My father belonged to the Deep Sea Mission for Seamen. My sister does now. She's the organist there. Mm-hmm. In the Queen Victoria Deep Sea Mission to Seamen, it is some building. Mm-hmm. And I suppose I belong to the Peace Pledge Union.
Mm-hmm. Was that but were you an Anglican by upbringing?
No,
or
no, no.
Or?
Very much a Wesleyan.
A Wesleyan?
Wesleyan. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, if I talked about my religious background, I'd be talking all day long. Mm-hmm.
So you and were the other people in your mess deck on the Abosso, were they all from your ordnance?
Yes, the unit? Same people, yes.
Same people.
Same people I knew.
And have you so you've been serving with these people now for some time, hadn't you, for a couple
yes,
of years?
Yes, yes, yes. From the day I met them at Whitchurch. Mm. We didn't alter and perhaps one would leave and none would come, but they were the same group of people. I could name them all, you know, with a piece of paper.
What happened when you got to Cape Town?
I was with two other ordnance people walking down, and I said, that fellow over there is calling us. No.
Well, this is when you were on shore.
Yes.
You got into Cape Town. And
I said, he's calling us. Mm. So we went over to him. He was an officer who had been not terribly hurt in France, but had been given leave to go home, and he invited us to his home.
Well, this is a South African.
Yes, yeah. And I've got a book somewhere where, and it was the same for the other two, to our dear Charles, you know. Who had a wonderful stay with us, you know, we wish him well, you know. And they said to me, we will write to your sister, which they did. And they said, oh, any more charming brother? He said, well, my sister's got that. And they took us out to some wine vineyards north of Cape Town. But we were there about 3 days. And we went there every day, showered. Williams, I think their name was. They were quite wonderful.
But why were you waiting in Cape Town? What had happened to the Abosso? Was that?
I don't know what happened to the Abosso, but when we went back, we went on to the Neuralia. Oh. That was shocking. It was dirty, filthy, cockroach-ridden, and a couple of old First World War veterans said it was condemned just after the First World War. It was really a real tub, whereas the Abosso was a kind of liner in the P&O.
And what sort of living arrangements did you have on the Neuralia?
Well, the food was down, I think, after the other, which was good. Yeah.
And were you on mess decks in the same way? With
same, yeah, same pattern, yeah.
How did you take to sleeping in the hammock?
It was comfortable, yes. Yes, I had no moans. I don't think anybody had any moans about it.
You're on the Neuralia, and your next port of call was Bombay.
Bombay.
But how did the voyage go to Bombay? Was that a smooth voyage?
In Bombay, I don't know whether Gandhi was in Bombay, but we went ashore.
Yeah.
I was smitten with the green grass of their cricket pitch. We watched some local cricket pitch by Indians, and the massive placards about cinema. But they had arrested Gandhi. Whether Gandhi was in Bombay or whether it was just the news of it, and the military police in jeeps were dashing around telling all troops to report back to their ships, which we did do. So as I've said there, yes, I was one day in Bombay, but I've seen India.
What I was going to ask, because this is the first, you know, apart from South Africa, this is the first time you've been abroad. What did you make of India? What were your first impressions?
Well, I was very impressed. The cricket, the greenness of the... I wondered in such a hot climb how they kept their grass so green, and the cinemas, and the dress of people. Yes, I was impressed. I was impressed with India.
So you had to go back to New Aurelia. What happened then? Were you all on board?
All on board, and we must have gone practically, you know, perhaps a day, but we were on our way up the Persian Gulf.
Oh. So that's going back west again, isn't it, having gone east?
Bombay, no, you're going north, aren't you, into the Persian Gulf?
North and west.
North and west.
Yeah. And before you got to Bombay, what were you travelling in a convoy, or were you travelling...
Yes, perhaps a much smaller convoy.
Yeah.
I remember they pointed out Madagascar to our left. Yeah, well, much smaller, I should think, yes.
Were there any... contact for submarines or aircraft and things
No trouble. No, it was
straightforward voyage to Bombay.
Straightforward voyage all the way.
And what about going up to the Gulf?
No trouble. Mm. No trouble. We went in about 17 cattle trucks. You know, we just herded on like they took the poor Jews to their concentration camps. Mm.
So where did you land in the Gulf first? Did you touch at Basra? Was that your first
Basra, Al Zubair, something around there. Yes, Basra. Yeah.
What was that like? What impression did that make on you?
I'm very hazy about that. I wouldn't like to pass any comment on that. Yeah. I've got the list of places we went to.
Yeah.
The two main places we stayed at was Kermanshah and Qum, which was a holy city.
Yeah. So Kermanshah and Qum, I think... So you went ashore at Basra, and then you were saying you were in trucks. Was this road trucks or railway?
A railway truck to,
yeah.
I think, in El Zubair, so just outside.
Mm.
All the rest of the travelling was done in corps transport.
Yeah.
Drivers.
So HQ 3rd Corps transport was there to meet
the
you,
time.
And you were on the... Yeah, okay.
A list of... I can think, you know, they, instead of calling them privates, they called them, I mean, Driver Herbert.
Yeah.
I found out he lived just down the road, just outside Witham. He died, you know.
Mm. What were you doing once you arrived in Kermanshah? What was the main activity?
Well, I can remember at Qum, we had a large dump outside, and people came to us for... those supplies.
Is this a corps dump?
A corps dump, yes.
Yeah.
And corps troops, you know,
yeah.
others under our command. I mean, a corps usually had a couple of divisions under their command.
Roughly, what was the area covered by this dump at Qum?
Well, just locally, you know, and it must have... The FSD, Field Service... I don't know the names... But, I mean, the main thing why we were there, we'd taken over from the Australian Army.
Mm.
And they were fearful that the Germans, had they gone through the Caucasus and then the Alberts Mountains, which was like the two of them, an umbrella over Iraq and Iran, they would have had, you name it, Iraq, Iran, Lebanon, Syria, the Holy Land, Egypt, India, you know.
But that Qum, how large an area did the dump cover? Do you have an idea of its extent?
No, I wouldn't know that. How far they came, no. I wouldn't just...
And what sort of place were you living in there? Were you in...
Tented outside.
Was that comfortable or uncomfortable? What was it like living...
I mean, the latrines were... I mean, whenever you moved, you had to kind of dig down... I've got photographs of them somewhere. You had to dig down about 5 feet. Then you had something like this with three sitting positions for the toilet.
A pierced bench.
And then round it there were stakes with,
yeah.
just to give it a little respect.
Yeah.
And Hessian, you know.
Yeah.
And that was it. I've got photographs where you've got three of them sitting on there all together, you know. Mm. There was no privacy, you know.
Mm.
And it went... from being very hot to for being very cold. Mm. And in a valley called Antimisk, 2 6-foot RSC drivers died of